Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hey everybody, it's Zach Harper. Some would call me the voice of The Athletic. Some also really wouldn't call me that and wouldn't like me saying it. Probably my bosses. You know me from The Athletic NBA Show on The Athletic Podcast Network. I do Basket Buds on Monday. I do Point of Contention on Thursday. Now you also know me from The Restricted Area. What's The Restricted Area, you ask? I'm so glad you asked me that. It's The Athletic's new weekly YouTube show. That's right, YouTube channel, The Athletic. It's me, it's Wozni Lambre. We're breaking down the most ridiculous and most interesting stories every single week. We're going to have a lot of fun. We'll make a lot of jokes. We'll have a lot of cool visuals. You won't want to miss this. So go over to The Athletic's YouTube channel. Make sure you smash that subscribe button, smash that like button, leave a nice comment, leave a funny comment, but just don't leave a rude comment. But make sure you check it out. We'll see you there. Well, actually, it's a video. You'll see us there. But if we could see you, that'd be kind of creepy.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Coming up on today's show, Yerone Weitzman of Tanking to the Top fame comes on to talk about Daryl Morey taking over in Philly, and we discuss the acrobatics involved in building a coaching staff.
This is Nerdish, You Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
And welcome to an all-new Nerdish, She Wrote on the Athletic NBA Show. I am back from a little mini vacation, and I am your host, Dave Dufour, joined as I am each and every week by Seth and Mo. How did Hollinger do as my replacement? What do you guys think? Is he going to take my job, or?
I mean, I've been campaigning for that for a very long time, Dave.
I mean, we always have to have one bald guy, so, you know, he filled the role adequately.
It was either that or Seth was going to have to bick it completely. It was one or the other.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to point any fingers, but, you know, I definitely don't think he's going to miss it much if he were to bick it. Let's just put it that way. Okay. So Daryl Morey didn't waste much time. Got himself a job with the Philadelphia 76ers. And, you know, we were trying to figure out who we should talk to discuss, you know, this sort of sea change that has now happened in the Eastern Conference. And the best we could come up with was a guy who literally wrote the book on the process, that book, Tanking to the Top, that man, Yerone Weitzman, host of Weitzman Can't Jump. What's up, buddy?
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, we're excited. This is probably as close as we've had to someone that gets the entire history of a team for a new hire ever. I mean, you really have like the full backstory. So first of all, I want to just start with how different is this going to be from the Hinkie reign?
That's a good question. Morey and Hinkie are different. I remember, so Morey actually spoke to Morey for the book, and one of the things he pointed out is that everyone compares us, and we're actually pretty different in terms of our personalities and styles from lots of things. He made a thing mentioned, I believe Sam is religious, and I believe, I hope I'm getting this right, Maury's not. Examples like that to how they go about interacting with other people, how they go about, you know, dealing with phone calls around the league and things like that. So, you know, and this is a subject near and dear to Seth, right? But people get labeled analytics guys and everyone assumes that they are just all the same and think the same and act the same. And I don't think that's the case here. I mean, I don't think. I know that's not the case. They just both approach.
Hold on. That's not true. You guys all don't think the same?
The way I summarized in the book, I thought this was a good way. If I may say so, if I may pat myself on the back. But it's not that, like, the similarity between Morey and Hinkie were not even that threes are better than twos. I mean, that is, but that's not the root of it. The root of it was, I believe, and the way I understood was, like, because that's how we've always done things, it's not an adequate answer. And let me get as much information as I can and look at things critically. That's the thing they, you know, held. And that's the similarity in terms of how they attack things. But in terms of like what they're looking for, styles even as a head man, I don't think there are so many similarities. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, there's only one song in the analytics hymn book, according to Seth Partnow. So it's we fully expect the Sixers to just turn into a 53-pointer a game team and all of these things. Mo, I mean, I guess when you look at the roster currently, do you expect any wholesale changes? I mean, you know, this is a team that was a lucky bounce away from a conference finals.
Well, we always say they're a lucky bounce away. They're a lucky bounce away from overtime.
Let's
let's go from there. And
it's just more fun to say that they.
Yeah, but you guys all know by now, and I'm the minister of no fun. So we're setting it up that way. But this team does need a lot of changes. Like, look, they need to build around these two guys, Simmons and Embiid. I think, you know, I think Dave and Seth, I think the three of us, I don't know where you're at on this, Euron, but I think the two of them can coexist, but you got to build a roster that works around them, and they just haven't done that. And I think there's a lot of changes to be made. I don't know if they're able to make those changes or all of that and in what order and how quickly, but we got to expect changes to be. I mean, Daryl's not, he's not one to kind of just stand back, right, and watch everything. Like, he's aggressive, you know, and sometimes too aggressive. Sometimes he talks about being aggressive, but isn't aggressive, all that stuff. But he wants to make moves in the sense to build this team that makes sense. And right now the roster itself just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you're a guy in Daryl's position, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. And I think that I'm much more into what Daryl does, which is, I mean, Seth, we talked about this when he left the Rockets. That's a guy that, you know, is always going to take a big swing. You never have to worry about him. He's not going to do the thing where you hear after the draft that he had offered, you know, these four picks to trade up, but was this close, or they came this close to getting a big man, because you know that the best deal is the one that he's trying to make.
So I think that a lot of what gets talked about Daryl's strengths are misinterpreted. It's like, you know, people talk about the analytics and the three is greater than two. I think his biggest strength is fearlessness. Like, you talk about being damned if you do, damned if you don't. Some people would be paralyzed by that. He just doesn't care. He doesn't give a damn. Like, more willing than I don't want to say, you know, every executive, but then by far most executives in the league, of making a deal that goes against like consensus. Oh, you want to make fun of us? I don't care. I think this is good for our team, so we're going to do that. And in a situation where they are kind of, you know, have some ill-fitting pieces and some questionable contracts on guys who are also ill-fitting pieces at the same time, you know, that allows for a certain amount of creativity that, you know, again, is more than I think most would bring to bear.
Yaron, how do you expect the ownership group to treat Daryl? Like, do you think it's going to be totally hands off? Like, you do your thing, and obviously he's going to be better about facing the media scrutiny than Sam was during his tenure. You expect this is Daryl's show?
To a point, right? I mean, that ownership group is handsy is the wrong word probably these days, but they like to be involved, right? In certainly all facets. And it's a lot of voices, right? So the ownership group, when I say the group, it's literally a group, right? You have the two majority owners in Josh Harris and David Blitzer, both very involved in all, you know, the whole sports operation, which owns Sixers, Devils, I forget which Premier League team, almost bought the Mets, things like that. So you have those two. You have minority owner Michael Rubin, who I believe is now 10% up to. He's best friends with Joel Embiid. Like, you know, again, slightly exaggerating best friends here. So that's the guy who's a heavy voice. And my understanding is he played a role a bit in the Daryl recruitment. Then you have CEO Scott O'Neill, who's the CEO of the Harris Blitzer Sports Group, which owns all of these. He's the CEO of, was the CEO of the Sixers, CEO of that. He's involved in decisions and, you know, hands-on has always been Some people would say too hands-on in terms of decision-making. So right there, like I just named four people, which is more than, you know, this is very different than other situations, right? Where it's just one rich guy who you're reporting to and like you kind of deal with him separately. So all that being said, they are not going to be hands-off completely. And nor should like, you know, sometimes we say, you know, you want owners not completely involved. I don't know if that's fair, right? I think it's good for owners to ask questions, make sure things are streamlined, working correctly. There's just that line. And it's, are you deferring to the expertise? I do, you know, I don't think Maury comes here, comes to Philadelphia, if he's not assured that he has final say. He also has the, like you said, he's going to, you know, another difference between him and Sam. Sam came in as a nobody to the Sixers. That is not Daryl Morey, right? Daryl Morey is a big time player, a powerful person in the NBA, a big name. He does not like, he's not going to be pushed around by, you know, Scott O'Neill. So again, when these guys have say, yeah, or they'll have input, I would imagine the final say will be with Daryl.
No, it's just ahead, a 5-year deal at what I'm assuming is pretty big money. That's a big bag to throw on the scale to weight it in your direction. It's like, well, it's just, okay, do it or don't. I don't like, okay, if you're going to do it that way, fire me and pay me then.
I'm more interested in the Doc Rivers part. Like, that's what I'm kind of interested in terms of how, what happens if those two, him and Maury, don't necessarily agree on something, which doesn't mean that they're fighting, but that I imagine that's a normal thing that happens with NBA teams, right? A head coach and a president.
It is interesting timing because they hired Doc before they hired the GM. And I do think that we've seen that blow up in numerous places already. And I've already wondered aloud whether this is a deal that has obviously been in the works for a little bit. And I can't imagine Doc signing on, not knowing, you know, all right, at least this is our target list. Like, we're trying to bring this guy in. And for sure, Daryl had to sign off because he signed the contract after Doc. So I agree. I think that dynamic is going to be extremely interesting. And I mean, Mo, you're our Doc whisperer.
Oh boy. Doc, I'm sure, loves to hear that. I'm of a different mindset than you, Dave. I think this was just more of an opportunity because it's not like they had an open position. You know, they had Elton Brand in the role, and, you know, it was one of those things. Look, this is, and it also goes back to, how much say does Daryl have? They chased him before they hired Elton Brand. Like, this is a guy they've long coveted. So I think when the opportunity came, it was, yo, let's get him. You know, he will only make us better. We wanted him before. Now he's available. Let's see if he's interested. And I think it's just one of those things. I don't know if Doc would have been as excited or as interested in the job had it been Daryl Morey. There are stories, though, that Daryl did kind of reach out to Doc while he was at Houston to see if he'd be interested in Houston. So clearly, you know, Daryl has some sort of appreciation for him, and they have that time in Boston together and to a degree. So for me, I don't know. I think I just push back a little bit. I think this was just an opportunistic situation for the Sixers to jump in and take advantage of, like, oh crap, this guy's available. Like, let's just see if he wants this job. We wanted him before, he's free now. And I think that's kind of how it played out. Now, how it's going to play out between him and Doc, I am fascinated. I want to be in all the meetings. I want to be a fly on the wall. I want to hear all that stuff goes. But I think they can find a way to, if they find a way to work with each other and it's somewhere in the middle, I think it's going to be beneficial for both of them.
I can tell you that's the line they're saying. What they're saying is that, you know, Daryl came on the market, and the way it was explained to me is, you know, the market inefficiency we're going to take advantage of is that other teams aren't spending during a pandemic. We're going to spend. So Doc comes on the market, boom, let's get him immediately. Who cares what it costs? Daryl, that guy's a stud. He comes on the market, boom, let's spend whatever it costs. There are lots of people around the league who will say, okay, cool, Daryl's not leaving a job if he doesn't know he has another one lined up. So, you know, it depends, I guess, how cynical you are. I'm confused by it. I don't really know what to believe because I'm a cynic, but I also know they, like, the way Elton Brand was conducting business and interviews, like, that was, they were operating as if that was somebody who was going to be the top job, have the top job in the Sixers organization. So I don't know, like, maybe the answer is this is the Sixers and they do things backwards sometimes. So maybe they did go backwards here.
But it's not unsimilar to one Doc came to the Clippers and became team president. Like, look, before that they hired, before we brought in Doc and traded for him, mind you, the Gary Sachs was the general manager. He was the guy making the decisions. He had the authority to kind of make things happen and do things. And then Doc, when we're talking with Doc, Doc says, "Yeah, I want to be team president. I want to decide things." That kind of changed the calculus of everything. And because we wanted Doc so bad, because that was to make sure we were able to re-sign Chris Paul that summer, you know, I think that kind of changed everything. So I think, to me, cynical, not whatever. For me, I just feel like, I call me stupid, but I just buy that. That's kind of how it played out in this scenario, in this instance.
I think we all kind of agree that Doc not having personnel decision-making powers is likely a good thing for Doc the coach. Because Doc the coach, often his worst enemy was Doc the GM. And I think that having now two people making these decisions above him, I think is a better way to go. Speaking of two people making decisions, you just mentioned Elton Brand has been running things. Now who's running things? Is it Daryl? I mean, is Daryl above him on the depth chart?
Yeah, I would say so.
So what happens now, right? Yeah. So what happens in that dynamic? You know, has Elton been completely usurped, or is this more of a we're going to work together situation?
It's a good question, right? They're going to say they're going to work together. I don't. The short answer is I don't know, right? I don't know the answer to that. I know. I think Elton's even on record from like when he first got the job. Before they promoted him, I think he's even said this on podcast. He said this publicly that like he told ownership, yeah, go talk to Daryl, go talk to other guys who are on the, you know, I know that name. I forget. I don't know if he named specifics, but just imploring them to say, no, I'm new. Let's, you know, go get these guys. We're now, who knows what time it is anymore? Two seasons later. I don't know how many years that translates to in 2020 ratio, but you know, it's different. Like he was certainly operating, whether it was his press conference, his postseason press conference, whether it was interviewing people, you know, to come work under him, people who would need GM jobs. Like Milt Newton was an assistant GM with the Bucks, and he interviewed with the Sixers at some point. And to take that job, you need, you know, can't do a lateral move. You got to be promoted. So that would be a GM job, which would mean Elton would be bumped up. There were other people like that who would need a GM job. So that stuff was definitely going on. The Sixers are saying that Elton was not only on board, but led the recruiting or talked about it. I don't know. That part's fuzzy. The short answer is like only time will tell on that one, right? Elton, he's definitely could be really good in a collaborative role, right? I don't think he has an ego. I think he's like secured himself, but everyone likes Elton. Well, most people like Elton around the league. He's smart. He got rushed into the job, which he admitted at first. It doesn't mean he doesn't want it now. He could probably benefit from being under Daryl, but doesn't mean he wants to stay there. And he doesn't need the money, right? So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Seth, how does it work when you've got two guys trying to share one hat? Is that a good thing usually?
Usually not, though. I think that the dynamic that Yaron talked about, where Daryl, I think Elton, even earlier this offseason, kind of talked a little bit about, correct me if I'm wrong, but he talked a little bit about how he kind of wasn't totally ready to do the job when he got it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so if there's a situation where, you know, you can accept someone being brought in over you, and especially someone with, you know, the obvious track record of success and the sort of the gravitas of Daryl Morey, that probably makes this a situation where it's more likely to work than kind of, you know, anywhere else. I don't think it is all like comparable to the last time the 76ers kind of did the thing where a guy is there and so no, he's going to be your boss. It'll be great. You'll work together. Which ironically was, you know, Daryl's protege, Sam Hinkie, getting basically pushed aside. I don't think it's that dynamic. Can work. It's just a matter of whether, you know, people are going to be willing to be work and play well with others. And, you know, there's no reason to think it will go either way at this point. So it's wait and see.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I wonder how risk-averse other teams are going to be. You know, we still don't know yet what the financials are. Obviously, some of this stuff has started to come out. But you mentioned that, Yaron, that Philly seems poised to be able to spend money, or at least to commit to spending money. This is an opportunity for them. They could be picking up pieces that other teams are looking to lose potentially because of the pandemic and the financial implications thereof. I mean, what do we expect out of this? Is he going to try to trade for James Harden? Or, I mean, I don't think it's going to be James Harden because Houston can't be that silly. But, you know, I mean, is there someone out there that he's just going to say, you know what, let's do this? Like maybe Chris Paul.
So there's two part. One, I'm fascinated because the Sixers have a history of selling off second round picks. And I'm fascinated by this, you know, if this is a line they're pushing that, hey, we're going to spend money now, that's going to be our zag. It'll be interesting to see if that, you know, if that's just a BS line. We can kind of see during the draft whether that is put into action or if teams maybe if some, I don't know, they'll see selling a first round pick. That hasn't happened in a while, but maybe that. In terms of the team, like I'd be very surprised, and I don't know anything, just logic. I'd be very surprised if Al Horford was on the team next year, right? I would think they'll try to, that'll be one of the first things they look at. And, you know, Maury, that is maybe one of his top skills, right? The ability to see the market, work the phones, and try to figure out or flip guys or figure out those kind of situations, what's out there. So I'd be very surprised if Horford is still on the team. The issue the Sixers have is, you know, everyone talks about the Horford and Harris contracts as being bad. But like when you start talking about creative trades, it's not like if you got rid of Tobias Harris, you can then do anything. You're not clearing cap space. You're clearing salary. You'd still be above the cap. So if you get rid of one of those guys, you still need to do something that, like, they're still, quote, good players, or not even, you know, Tobias Harris is Tobias Harris is a legitimately good player. He's just not a max $40 million a year player. So whoever you trade, you got to make sure, like, two things. You're trying to trade or create some kind of, like, flexibility, but also make sure your team is still not good or not going back a step. And I think that's where things get tricky there.
Well, and because you can't give up too much, right? Like you still have to field a team that I've actually thrown around the idea that they may have to lose like Matisse Thybul to move one of these contracts. I don't know if that's still going to be the case. Surely Daryl is more creative when it comes to the CBA and salary cap than I am. I'm sure he can figure out some sort of carrot to put on a string for these teams. But he's going to have to use some of these useful pieces to move one or both of those contracts.
So this is the spot where I think that the Doc Daryl dynamic is most interesting, because one of the things that like Maury has been able to do in kind of his never-ending quest to assemble the pieces necessary to trade for a star if he becomes available is to be able to find guys, whether they're, you know, undrafted rookies, second rounders, guys who've played overseas, who, you know, guys who've fallen out of the league. Ben McLemore, PJ Tucker, even Montrezl Harrell, like, you know, those type of players. To say that Doc is not noted for his player development or giving, you know, fringe guys, you know, a lot of a chance is sort of an understatement. So there is a little bit of a movement in the league for player development to be a more of an org thing than a coaching thing. So that's a real intersection between those two that I'm very interested in, because a lot of, maybe not even this year, but maybe even looking towards trade deadline or next year, is going to be who are these other, whether it's Matisse Thybul, whether it's, you know, develop Zaire Smith, whether it's find a guy somewhere else who can then be like a little extra that you can use in a trade. That's, I think that is the one area where the relationship and interaction and division of responsibilities between those two is going to be really interesting as far as the roster moving forward.
But, you know, Doc, not this year, but the year before, you know, when pressed, does do it, right? Like, he had to play a lot more young guys the year when the Clippers were going to be the 8th seed and that hard-working team. He had to play, you know, depend a lot on Landry Shamet, and he had to make work on that development stuff. So I think there's a push in there. Like, I think there's a way to kind of push Doc into that direction, because I think you're right, Seth, in the sense of, you know, Doc has to get better with the player development, with giving these guys time. The only way you're going to be able to make Matisse Thybulle and Zaire Smith, for example, as guys that you can count on in the playoffs is by playing them in the regular season and allowing them to play through mistakes and stuff. And we've seen in the past where he struggled with that, but when forced to, have to do it. So I think that's kind of one of those, again, it would be fun to watch that meeting between Daryl and Doc, you know, have that discussion and see how Daryl's able to kind of, if he can bring Doc around into saying, like, look, we're going to compete for a title, but at the same time, we got to develop these guys and we got to start building this up here a bit. And it'll be fascinating to watch that whole thing shake down.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Well, I mean, that leads right into our next topic. We're in staff building season right now. And, you know, Doc is interesting because we knocked him quite a bit for the way he did not develop guys like Landry Shamet into being usable players for them in the playoffs. Landry Shamet should have been a rotation player this year, I thought, in the playoffs, and he just wasn't ready for the responsibility. Part of that, Mo has pointed out, they were asking him to do things that he wasn't really good at. And the NBA is a hard place to do that. So when you're looking at building a staff, I mean, I guess let's just start with Doc. Is player development like the number one priority for a staff with Doc on it for you guys?
For me, not so much. What they need on this staff is, you know, and I think they're getting it in some of the guys we've seen coming over, is they need guys that aren't going to just be yes men or guys that are going to start to push a little bit on the players. You know, we just saw announcements, you know, Sam Cassell is going to join Doc. I think Dan Burke from longtime Indiana Pacers assistant who I thought was never going to leave Indiana, you know, at this point, is joining Doc. And I think they need guys that aren't going to take excuses or allow, you know, kind of the guys to get away with some of the stuff they have. And I find it interesting. So for me, I don't think this staff necessarily needs a ton of development coaches, but I think I think the guys they need are guys that can really get in these players' faces and really get in on them and start to coach them. Cause I think that's something that they've missed on this staff over the years.
Yaron, do you think that Dan Burke's comments about Joel Embiid are going to be an issue?
I think Embiid tweeted about them yesterday already. He made a joke about it. I asked somebody, I was reassured that it's all good and that they can't wait. I was told that they can't wait for the first practice for Embiid to figure out some way to poke at Dan Burke.
I actually don't think that that's a bad thing, honestly.
No, it's funny. Yeah, right? It's hilarious.
Yeah, because in a way, there's a little bit of a compliment there when you have a coach who is so annoyed by a player that he says it publicly, you know, and we all know Tony Allen was great at annoying people. Patrick Beverly, great at it. Marcus Smart, great at it. But every single coach in the league would probably love to coach those guys, especially Marcus Smart. I mean, let's be honest. But Seth, when you're thinking about building a staff, like from a front office perspective, you know, how much say do you think a front office should have in a coach's staff?
I mean, that's the multi-million dollar question. Again, I think we've talked in the past about how like the dual role of, you know, head coach and GM is too much for one person to have. I kind of think in today's NBA, the everything that's kind of traditionally been lumped into the head coach's job is too much. So I think, I mean, in some ways, I think it's almost a good way to split like some development responsibilities off from you know, obviously there's differences between the sport, but move a little more towards a baseball model in that, you know, we have an institutional culture of how guys get better here and that survives through, you know, different regimes and stuff like that. So I think that part you the front office, I would want to have say in it. And beyond that, you know, a guy, especially a guy who has been a longtime successful coach, I think he probably knows what he needs on his staff to a large degree, a little bit better than I might, because every staff operates in a different way. And so there's not necessarily defined roles that you can drop people in from the outside.
The Sixers, the thing fascinating about them, to bring it back to them, and I'll be interested to see how this plays out this year. Last year, they had like one of the biggest player development staffs in the league. Like, I think they would even have separate meetings. Like, you know, Brett Brown would have to separate, you know, there was too many people to have as your normal coaches meeting. So they would have like a separate meeting for the quote developmental people. I even remember, I'm not going to name names, but I remember being at a practice once and asking somebody who worked for the team, do you know how many development guys you have, how many members of staff you have? He's pointing around, we're in Miami, and he points to another a guy. I don't remember who the development coach was, and he didn't know his name. And he said, oh, he's with us. I can't remember his name, which was, I'm not going to say who either end. But I thought, you know, that's not something that happens. You know, most people who are with NBA traveling parties, everyone in the traveling party knows each other's name, right? That's a little different. They also have like a vice, her name is Annalie Schmittel. I'm going to mispronounce her name and I apologize. She was like a vice president of player development. It's sort of like they took a role that was never an executive role and they made it an executive, and different people were reporting to her, not necessarily Brett. It was just a whole different system than we had with other teams. And it'll be interesting to see how much of that is carries over into Doc staff or is forced to. Like, was that just a Brett Brown thing? I don't think it was. I don't really know where that came from, but that's just like one of those little interesting things to pay attention to in terms of, you know, signs if are the Sixers operating in a different sort of way.
Well, I like the idea of the development, having the separate meetings. It's not even just because you have too many guys. A lot of times guys are getting work before practice. You know, and that's where your development coaches aren't in the coaches meetings. You know, coaches meetings normally go literally up until practice is about to begin. And those guys, you know, when I was with the Clippers, we had Dave Severance. This is under Vinny Del Negro. You know, he'd be in the coaches meeting for a little bit and then boom, had to run downstairs to start working with guys and so on. So I think it's something I wouldn't be surprised to almost see that kind of change a little bit. Like in San Antonio, Chip England and Chad Forcier were rarely in coaches' meetings because they were part of the development and part of the daily vitamin. And I think, you know, that's the phrase we refer to it as. I think that's kind of where that sort of comes from a little bit. So it'd be interesting to see how other teams do that. And then to kind of the point Seth was making about coaches and picking their staffs, I think it just comes down to who you hired, you know, and Seth was spot on. If you hire a guy like Doc Rivers, he knows what he needs. He knows what he wants around his staff and so on. Then if you hire a guy who's never coached before, you might need to give him a little more help in terms of names and who to look at and who you like. I think it just comes down to who you hire as your head coach. And from there, you start to build it out.
Any of you guys worried about Oklahoma City at this point? I mean, we're now less than 3 weeks from the draft. We don't know when free agency is going to start. We're not sure when the season's going to start, but we know it's within like 8 to 10-ish weeks. OKC still doesn't have a head coach, which means they don't have a staff. And guys are getting poached. It's drying up out there. How worried should Oklahoma City be, Seth? Like, I see you grinning right now. Like, I understand that they're at a pivot point in their franchise history. But you still need a good coach, even with young players. Like, hopefully you have a good coach.
On the other hand, if you want to talk about the team that's sort of the epicenter of player development being an org thing rather than a head coaching thing, that's probably OKC. So in terms of having, you know, guys in the gym to work with players when players are back in gyms and stuff like that, they are as well set up to do that without kind of the head guy as probably anybody. But on the other hand, like, you know, we're, you know, possibly a month from training camp starting. And
yeah, that's a whole other story.
So yeah, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if we saw someone announced there shortly, just cause like, oh man, we've got some hiring to do here. So, yeah, I would be a little worried just on that time frame.
I mean, there are a lot of basketball coaches, don't get me wrong. And there's a lot of really good coaches that probably should get a shot. I mean, Mike D'Antoni doesn't have a job right now. I'm not saying he's going to take the OKC job. I would doubt that very seriously. But there are plenty of coaches out there. It's just that the known quantities at this point are gone. I mean, Steven Silas was an assistant for 20 years. He's as known a quantity as an assistant coach as you're ever going to get. And he just got a job in Houston. And so when I'm thinking about possibilities for OKC, Steven Silas was actually high up on my list for them. A, he's been around for a long time, but B, you know, he seemed like the type of guy that they're going to be going for that job. I mean, maybe they'll call Ime Udoka.
I mean, there's a lot of guys, I think, for that job. I think that's a job that's kind of ripe for a former player or first year coach situation. Ime Udoka is a good guy. I think Jamal Mosley from Dallas is another good assistant coach you might want to look at bringing, because this is a development job. This is a right. Rebuild where this is why you're not going to get a D'Antoni or anything like that.
In the second round of the playoffs next year, I'm going to make sure we pull this clip because.
Oh, go ahead, Dave. Go ahead. Because they're not. You can listen, Oklahoma City, chill out. Relax. You guys are going to have a fun regular season, maybe, but don't. You can make plans for after April. I don't think you're going to have playoffs there, but it's going to be a good job for a young coach, kind of, or a Taylor Jenkins like guy. I think those are the kind of guys they're looking at. But it's interesting you talk about the assistant coaching candidates kind of being taken, because that's a great point, Dave, in that the longer you wait, it's not just the coach you're missing out on. It's the assistants that you want to probably go get. I mean, you know, I want to talk about the Clippers staff because they're putting together kind of almost an all-star staff. You know, they hire Ty Lue. They're probably going to bring in Chauncey Billups, and he's probably the least experienced coaching-wise on that. Well, he is the least experienced coaching-wise on that staff, but they're bringing Dan Craig from Miami. They're bringing Kenny Atkinson to run their development and things like that, and that's going to be a big big part for them. You know, they have Larry Drew, another former head coach. Like, they're building a staff where you're just kind of like, damn, this is a hell of a staff. And then you're going to look at Oklahoma City when they hire their coach, and it's going to be like, I don't know who the other guys are.
I'm surprised Kenny Atkinson wasn't mentioned for OKC more. That always felt like a good mix for me. The other thing I would say, though, is I think, you know, if Sam Presti thought he was going to miss out on one of his candidates, I think he would have scooped out. It's clear that he's just has, for whatever reason, whether it's financial, we like the guys that other people don't because we're in a different timeline, whatever reason, there's clearly not a rush there from his standpoint. And he clearly doesn't feel like he has to be in a bidding war or is about to be beat out for anybody.
Maybe he'll pull a Greg Popovich and we'll see Sam Presti on the bench next year. No way.
That'd be a shocker.
Okay. So, Yaron, you're new here. As we wrap up each week, we like to close with the stuff that we're sort of paying attention to. Either things that we've noticed over the last couple of weeks or things that we're looking ahead to. So I'm going to put you on the spot because we didn't talk about this before the show. But what's on your basketball mind as we look ahead? I mean, the draft, like I said, it's 3 weeks away, less than 3 weeks. What are you thinking about right now?
I was going to say we're talking basketball, right? Because otherwise I can go much longer.
Well, no, only basketball.
I suffer from Sixers brain, so I'm just really interested to see like how quickly these Al Horford rumors start popping up and what are the options there. Because, you know, how Daryl Morey plays around with Al Horford, Josh Richardson, and lots of first and second round picks and what that looks like around. That's kind of what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, I keep seeing this Wiggins for Horford trade, and I'm just
yawn.
I just don't get it. It makes no sense to me. Mo, what about you?
Yeah, no, I'm just going to continue kind of keeping an eye on just the staffs. Like, I kind of enjoy this stuff. I mean, hey, Doc is promoting a former video coordinator to his bench. So, you know, I'm happy for Pete Dominguez. He's earned it. He's been great wherever he's been. So I think, you know, that's exciting. I'm just going to keep watching that stuff. And I mean, there's just not much basketball for me to watch or break down at this current moment.
It is funny how video guys root so hard for other video guys. I mean, I'm sure that there's some video guys that nobody likes. Actually, I know.
Yeah,
that there
are video guys that nobody likes. I was probably one of them. So.
But I do. I have a soft spot for those guys. Obviously, I work a lot with NBA's video guys for Sports Business Classroom. So I always love to see those guys getting jobs. Seth, what about you, man?
So we recorded last week kind of before the push towards the very early season start came. And then later last night, there was sort of some of the pushback from Michelle Roberts from the Players Union about that. This is fascinating, just the mechanics of getting the season started by Christmas time. I think that, you know, in a sort of a normal situation, there's just enough time to do it. Doing it amidst a pandemic, how's this going to work? That's really what I'm most paying attention to is, you know, the degree to which there's protocols versus there's a little bit of YOLO and we'll figure it out as we go.
The opposite of what they did with the bubble.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them continue to be pragmatic like they were with the whole Orlando situation. Obviously, it's untenable to do a regular season bubble. That's just not going to work because there are human beings involved and there's just too many moving parts. That's too big of an ask of people. But I do hope that they continue to be pragmatic. I actually thought Ethan Strauss over at The Athletic, remember, theathletic.com/NBA show, a buck a month. I thought Ethan did a really good job of coming to a compromise situation on the schedule where you actually stagger for teams. The deeper you went in the Orlando bubble, the later your season starts. And then by the end, you can speed things up and catch up. I think that it's not perfect, but obviously we're dealing with imperfect times. And I think that coming up with something that is fair, but also safer, you know, the last thing anyone wants is the Miami Heat or the Lakers being punished by having an increased chance of injury because of a short turnaround. I just don't think anyone wants that, including other teams in the league that have to play those teams. You know, nobody wants to see anyone at less than 100%. So hopefully they figure that out. For me, I am doing draft work finally, and I am going to spend the next 2 weeks, because we're off next week, trying to figure out why Desmond Bane isn't going to be the number one pick in this draft. I cannot figure it out. The guy is too good. He's too jacked. He can shoot too well. He can handle the ball too well. I just don't get it. I know he's 22 years old, but that guy is really, really good. So I'm going to be spending the next 2 weeks looking at all these draft guys, trying to figure out why Desmond Bane is not the first pick. Guys, don't forget, we have a YouTube channel. The Athletic has a YouTube channel. We got a new show, Zach Harper, Big Waz, called Restricted Area. Go check that out. Of course, go to theathletic.com/NBA show. Sign up for $1 a month. Yaron, thank you so much. I'm so glad you were able to
thank
come on.
Guys. I appreciate it.
I know your dance card is probably pretty full today, but I'm glad you made time to come hang out with us.
My pleasure. This is great.
Yeah. For Seth and Mo, I'm Dave, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.